This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Earth Matters. I'm Lee Chui Lin. A bill to adopt nuclear energy to generate power may be tabled soon in the next parliamentary sitting, which starts in October. But Malaysia's anti-nuclear lobby has already voiced concerns over its safety as well as the lack of public consultation. So what exactly are the government's plans for nuclear power and what are some of the issues that people have seen about this? Joining me to discuss this are Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, and Yin Shao Lung, Executive Director of Institute Rakyat. The Malaysian Nuclear Agency declined our request for an interview. Let's start off with whether you know if the Nuclear Energy Bill is going to be tabled in Parliament in October.
The minister in charge of the nuclear power plant has indicated that the bill will come for debate in the budget session, which is the October session of Parliament. But let me also share with you that this same, his predecessor had also said that the bill will have come in February of this year during the February session of Parliament. So this is the second time around where they're saying it's going to come to Parliament. But I think most recently, the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corporation, Chief Executive Officer Zamzam, Dr. Muhammad Zamzam Jaffar, clearly said in an interview in March, April, that this will be there in October this year. A bill will be brought forward entitled Atomic Energy Regulatory Bill. Will be tabled and debated in Parliament.
From what I understand, this is currently 4 years behind schedule, the plan anyway. And what has kept it at that rate? You know, what has kept it behind?
Well, the government's plans are never transparent. So you never can say why the delay. Just to share with you, I have asked umpteen questions in Parliament, along with other members of Parliament, about a cost-benefit analysis. Have you done a cost-benefit analysis? Have you done an environmental impact assessment study? Have you consulted the local communities in which you're going to construct the nuclear power plants? And the answer always is, it's a work in progress. When it is ready, we will inform you the riot. So this is what a parliament response is. So that's the only thing I can share with you.
I think the government's very aware that the decision to bring nuclear power to Malaysia is highly controversial and doesn't enjoy very much public support. In fact, I know from surveys that between 70 to 80% of the public opposes the idea of nuclear power, and a comparable amount also don't have confidence in the government to run it.
With that being said, then, why does the government want to move ahead with nuclear energy?
Let me just underscore what Shao Long had said, though. A recent study by the entitled National Energy Security Survey, NESS, that study showed that 97% of all respondents had major issues or lack of faith in government's ability to regulate a nuclear power plant in Malaysia. 97%. And there's only 2.14% that said, yes, we support it, though. The rest said, no, we don't want. We're anywhere close to it, though. So I thought we'd just share that information. That tells you the level of awareness and the level of opposition towards the policy.
So actually, I mean, if I can add, going back to your earlier question as well, Institute Rakyat is also part of a NGO coalition called the Malaysian Coalition Against Nuclear, or MICAN. And what we've noticed over the years with respect to the government's approach towards nuclear power is that there's a very clear pattern, and that pattern's a cycle. So the government usually makes some kind of bold announcement by a minister or the prime minister himself. Then there'll be opposition to it, and then they'll back, and then they'll go quiet. But meantime, they will begin establishing the institutions necessary to bring about the full implementation of nuclear power, such as setting up things like the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corporation and so forth. And then they'll come back out with another bigger announcement. So there's a cycle of like going public, going to ground, going public, going to ground, because they know that it's very controversial. At the same time, they need to court investment in this area as well.
Does any part of the cycle include a moment where the government responds to the opposition? Because, I mean, if you look at the numbers, that survey that you cited, Charles, and also just in general, if you look at the feel on the ground, as you both mentioned, opposition seems to be overwhelming. Has there been any response to this opposition?
Well, I think the government has hired a public relations company in order to sell the project and to have a buy-in among the different constituencies in the country. And I also think that Malaysia has signed a memorandum of understanding with Korea, Japan, and so on, to learn from them how they have done their public relations with their societies in their own country. So Malaysia is learning from them and at the same time conducting public exercises such as this. They're having public roadshows and so on and so forth.
Yeah, but I understand that they've conducted one roadshow or sort of town hall briefing in Bangsar with about 30 people there. Mm.
There is that. Xiaolong, if a nuclear plant is managed properly and is a clean, almost endless source of energy, why shouldn't Malaysia embrace it?
Well, a lot hangs on those ifs. It's not a clean source of energy, nor is it an affordable one, actually. Because once you look at the total life cycle of the nuclear power plant, the costs really add up. Construction costs tend to balloon, tremendous delays, there's all the regulatory hurdles. Once it's operational, that's usually the point where you start to see probably the lowest cost stage of the nuclear power plant's life, and that's what nuclear industry advocates tend to focus upon. But, you know, the nuclear power plant isn't simply just its operational life. It has a very, very, very long impact on the economy and the environment, and that's primarily in terms of the waste that's produced. And that kind of waste can last for thousands of years and normally requires it to be kept in sort of near-site or on-site storage for up to 100, 150 years just so that the level of radioactivity can lower to manageable levels before an attempt at final disposal is done. But the key problem here is that every single country that has implemented nuclear power, none of them have found a viable, reliable way of permanently disposing nuclear power. That technical challenge still eludes humankind. So as long as that problem is still there, we can't really accept that nuclear power is actually a long-term solution, because in fact it still presents itself as an incredibly long-term problem.
Can I just add into that, just say a word or two on this though. The government's projection, the 2010 projection, is that the cost of building these two power plants is $23 billion. This is 5 years ago. We are in 2015 now. And by the time it kicks off, it will be 2017 at the latest, so 7 years. So that number, $23 billion, will now go up to maybe about $27 or $30 billion, right? Now, what they have not told us is the decommissioning cost. What they haven't told us is the permanent disposable system that they have, that they should have, or the spent fuel management. Now, if you include all these three elements, you're looking at $100 billion at the minimum. Now, I was in Germany a couple of months ago, and I visited nuclear power plants. Decommissioning a nuclear power plant, even in Germany, runs into billions of euros. Now, I'm not so sure that Malaysia actually has the money. And in fact, the more critical question is whether it is efficient energy. So if you include decommissioning costs, spent fuel management, including the permanent disposable sites, energy will not be cheap. It'll be very, very expensive. So the argument that the government puts forward, among the many, is that this is efficient. Now, is it efficient? There is no study that says it's efficient at all.
Actually, I mean, if I can add, based on what Charles already said, the financing of this nuclear power plant, or power plants actually, because they're talking about more than one, somewhere between two and four, the financing of these power plants could turn out to be quite a nightmare, because, we've already learned recently that there may be a connection between 1MDB and the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corporation. So basically, some of the subsidiaries of 1MDB, SRC International, contain the same board members that sit on the Malaysian Nuclear Power Corporation. And these aren't people with any necessarily nuclear power expertise. But we know that 1MDB's model has been to buy into the power industry, and it's taken on a lot of debt in order to take on this industrial model. And Malaysia itself has had to suffer the consequences of the very hazardous management of this kind of debt, the issuance of bonds, the sudden sales of land to Datuk Haji and so forth, just to manage these existing assets, so-called assets that 1MDB has. Now, there's a great concern that 1MDB, being a power player, may also get into nuclear power. And the kinds of costs that are associated with what Charles talked about in terms of the long-term disposal, the construction costs, operational costs, are these going to be sources of future debt burden for the country to take on? Will we have to issue bonds in order to pay off nuclear power obligations? how expensive is nuclear power going to get for us?
Talking about financing, there's another angle to this. Who's going to pay for this? Now, I think the government has floated a couple of ideas, and one of them is the notion of build, operate, and transfer. Build, operate, and transfer, which means that it'll be underwritten by either the Russians or the Chinese. So they will build, and they'll operate, and then they'll transfer it to, you know, a Malaysian corporation. Now, this is also leading to a lot of controversies, though, because it's got security issues, geopolitical issues, and so on and so forth.
I'm speaking today with Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, as well as Yin Chow Lung, Executive Director of Institute Rakyat. We are examining the viability and safety of Malaysia's nuclear plans. Up next, we look specifically at safety measures. You're listening today to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture. I'm Lee Chui Lin. With me today, Charles Santiago, MP for Klang, and Yin Chow Lung, Executive Director of Institute Rakyat. We are discussing Malaysia's nuclear plans. What safety measures do we know are being prepared to be put in place for these plants?
So far, there hasn't been any clear transparency on the safety measures involved because the government hasn't chosen to either decide upon or disclose what type of plant that it's using. Not every nuclear power plant is built equally. Usually every plant has a unique design and often unique problems associated with that, which is why the construction and operation of plants varies tremendously. We know from examples in other countries of the kinds of things to look out for, you know, such as hazards with the containment mechanisms, whether the waste is disposed properly, whether people are shielded from exposure to nuclear waste, and also whether the plant, say that with the Fukushima disaster, is also securely built such that there's no breach of the reactor and, you know, resulting in a spill.
I have asked the question on safety many times, and the government's answer always is, we are still doing the feasibility study. Now, why is the feasibility study important, and why is it necessary for the government to make it public? And that's simply because this is an important, this safety issue is a very important issue in relation to nuclear power plants. Fukushima is a good example of that. And there are many other places in the world with similar tendencies. So I think the government is a bit worried. If they go public with the safety issues, people will reject it outright. So they're going to steal it through. So my only concern is they'll bring a bill to Parliament this October, and be given the majority of the Barisan MPs, they will carry it through. And once that happens, then we are in trouble. Next issue will be the construction of the site itself. Now, having said that, another issue is, have they consulted local communities? Now, this is one important requirement of the many requirements in establishing a nuclear power plant. At this time, the government says no, they have not done the consultation. The question one is, which are the states that you're looking at? We can't tell you because we haven't done the exercise. But on the site, we hear rumors, though. And you know, Malaysia, people believe in rumors because most of the time it is true, though. So the government is looking at Johor, they're looking at Pahang, they're looking at Terengganu, and maybe a place in Perak. Two sites in Johor, two sites in Pahang, two sites in Terengganu, and one in Perak. Now, where I got the information is from the rumor mill, though.
What would that process of consulting local communities look like? You know, you have to hit the ground. How would that process be if it were to happen?
It's going to depend on the laws, actually, because usually for big projects of this nature, we probably refer to the laws which govern environmental impact assessments, right? And that's required underneath the Environment Act of 1974. So the question is whether nuclear power plants will be scheduled under those kinds of projects that require a sort of EIA under standard guidelines. The other question that comes is whether the new law that's perhaps forthcoming this Parliament session is going to create an exception to that and create a different process with different guidelines. A lot is going to hang on whether the consultation is adequate, whether it's timely, whether the local communities or the potentially affected communities get sufficient information about the impacts and the risks that are presented to them. The big concern that I have and many others have is that Malaysia has a bit of a bad track record in doing consultation with local communities prior to the establishment of a large project. You could take the Lynas plant, the rare earth plant near Kuantan as one example, and then you had massive community opposition to it. There's also quite a worrying track record in terms of treatment of communities after a project has been built. I'll give you one example. It's actually another rare earth plant, and it's a radiation case. That's the Asian rare earth plant that was built in Perak, not far from Ipoh, in the 1980s. And that plant was basically regulated under the existing Atomic Energy Licensing Act because the wastes were radioactive, and they weren't disposing the waste properly. So the waste is being dumped in the open, actually in some cases being given to the nearby new village as fertilizer to be planted into the gardens of the residents there. And so that resulted in children developing leukemia and other forms of deformities. They took the company to court. It got very politically sensitive. The courts at one point supported the community. The High Court, I think, later overturned it. The community organizers and their lawyers were put under the Internal Security Act in Operasi Lalang, simply for trying to pursue a case to protect the health of themselves and their children. And basically, it demonstrated a failure of national institutions to protect people's health and the public health whenever there was business interest involved, and in this case, business involving radiation as well. So there are sort of grave concerns about this kind of history and whether that's going to be addressed at all by our regulatory system.
That, of course, clearly set a worrying precedent. Were the issues that were raised in that case resolved or at least addressed, you know, subsequently? Because we are talking about something that happened decades ago now.
The issues weren't resolved. I mean, I visited the village as recently as about 5 years ago. I talked to the people there. They're still dealing with the problem. They're still trying to raise, their children who are now mentally impaired as a result of exposure to radioactive materials. The company involved was never successfully shut down as a result of legal action. There were boycott campaigns, but they lasted for quite a while until their business sort of went out of economic viability, basically. Then they shut down, and the bulk of the old factory is there, and the waste actually is still residing in Perak, and it's rotting away. Even Dr. Mahathir has finally admitted that the waste is actually sitting out in the jungle there and in poorly contained concrete blocks.
And it could be, leaking somewhere.
Yeah.
And I think there's a failure of government here, though. The government has not explored in a very serious fashion renewable energy. The whole world, there's a discussion all over the world whereby people are moving away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. But somehow this government doesn't give it a priority in terms of the energy mix. We can have solar energy, we can have wind energy, and so on and so forth, which is something we can develop. But there is no commitment, absolutely no political will or commitment. Can you imagine, these guys want to spend, at least in paper now, $23 billion onto two power plants, but do not want to spend $100 million to develop new technology involving solar or wind, for that matter. I mean, today we know the world is in a crisis. There's a global climate change crisis. And every effort in order to turn it around should be supported. But the government seems to be thinking that nuclear power plant is environmental friendly, as well it is clean and is efficient. In all three grounds, it is not. It's really not. It has got enough problems that it can create for society and become a burden to society, though, which is something that we have to avoid at all costs. So I think the government has to go back to the drawing board and start looking at renewable energy. For example, in the case of Germany, though, Germany has very slowly, progressively moved away from fossil fuels to renewable energy. In fact, today, as we speak, 23% of all energy that comes out, that is being used in Germany, is being produced at homes, in people's houses, or in villages, in small villages. 23% is very high. So you can begin to see how families, individuals, have a stake in not only producing electricity, but also controlling the price of electricity, though. This is fantastic, though. You have a new kind of energy democracy developing. And to boot, you now have all the big German utility companies like RWE moving away from fossil fuels and supporting renewable energy, though. So they are pumping money, lots of money, into renewable energy. So I think the government really has to move away from thinking that nuclear power plants will be the solution to all our problems, energy problems. It's not, clearly not. And therefore, this is also about a policy shift and a mindset in the way we approach energy and also environment in the coming years and decades.
Is that push for a change going to come from commercial parties, or is it going to come from the government, though? Because, I mean, if we look at the situation which you just described, a lot of it came from the fact that corporations and companies are also interested in making that shift, in having that move away. And here, that might not be the case.
I think you need all stakeholders' involvement here, though. You need companies, you need government, and you need households. All three people putting their minds together and saying, where do we want to go with this? In the case of Germany, it's the government who made the push. It's the government who made the push and made the funds available to local villages and made the funds available through the banking system for households to produce their own energy. So today, a lot of German households produce their own energy for their own consumption and sell it to the grid. Can you imagine? It's a good business. A lot of people are quite happy with that, though. But that tells you something, that we have moved from this mindset that one big corporation will supply energy for everybody. Here, people generate. People generate from their homes and villages. I visited a very interesting experiment in Fellheim, which is about 2.5 hours away from Berlin, where the entire community depends on renewable energy, though, from solar and wind, including the industries that they have. So this is really a good example. And I encourage our policymakers to go there, learn. Although we are not Germany, we don't have the same kinds of expertise, same kind of development, but we can learn from the formula in which it has worked for them.
I would say that there's been a lot of contradiction and confusion in the government's approach towards energy policy. In fact, actually, nuclear power is a bit of a wild card in relation to existing energy policies. The government actually had a policy to promote renewable energy as the fifth fuel in the 1990s. Some reason or other, that was abandoned, even though the Renewable Energy Bill was put in place and we had the launch of the feed-in tariff. But there's been a lot of accountability and distribution problems associated with the implementation of that. Sometimes, you know, one person just picked up a lot of the quota. The market for renewable energy hasn't been democratized to the extent that it has in Germany, as Charles has said. The other reason is also that the government, even with the new Malaysia plan, the 11th Malaysia plan, hasn't been very clear or transparent or even consistent about what it sees as the energy future. It's got a commitment towards tackling climate change in one chapter, and then by the next chapter it's presenting its energy mix, which is basically proposing that the amount of coal increases as a share of our electricity generation. And there's no mention of nuclear there until you look later on the chapter, and there's another sort of vague statement about nuclear. So the energy policy at the moment is actually in chunks, and it's not consistent with what the government has committed to before. While we can clearly see that a lot of money has been pumped into promoting and establishing the Nuclear Power Corporation, so one must ask, where is the driving force? I mean, we have seen that the Prime Minister is personally interested in the project, and he's championed it since he was, I think, Deputy Prime Minister. I think perhaps taking up the baton from the late Jabaluddin Jarjis, who used to be the Minister for the old Ministry of Ministry, Science, Technology and Innovation. I think he was perhaps the first person who brought up the idea of nuclear power in Malaysia. So this idea has, you know, sort of traveled at least through elite political circles. But I think there's a gap that needs to be closed, actually, between public expectations that Malaysia needs to be cleaner and greener in its approach to the use of energy. And there's a desire for more renewable energy. You can see the way in which people have been keen to embrace solar panels and so forth. The government just needs to create a more enabling environment. But, you know, they are tied to very large power corporations, which have equally sort of monopolistic expectations of the market. And having renewable energy come in and democratize how the economy works in energy is a big of a threat to large power players.
It's not just public perception, I think, that we need that, you know, that loop needs to shut. It's also going all the way back to community expectations and interacting with local communities. When we look at possible sites, you know, that the rumor mill has churned out based on what we know, what laws do we have on public protection, and what laws would you both like to see in place when it comes to where the possible sites may be?
Well, I think, one, we need to be, or the ministry needs to be transparent. The question is not so much about the law itself, but also about the approach in the way we look at transparency and governance. We have to be transparent, and people in the location must be consulted. There must be a national debate. Even before you go and talk to the people in that particular location, there must be a national debate. A national debate where we can look at the pros and cons of, and also the financing. That is really the kicker here, though. The financing. Who's going to financing? Who's going to finance this? And how is it going to be done? I think the larger issues have to be dealt with. Once the larger issues are dealt with, then if there's a need for a nuclear power plant, at that time, I'm actually quite sure there'll be no need for it, though, because people will reject it completely. And now, given the dire straits of the government in terms of finances, this project is not going to take off. And also on top of that, I think really the way it has come out, in the way it has been floated, it appears to me more of a crony project than really a project to help solve our energy problem that we might have in a few years to come.
When we look at the energy problem, Malaysia talks about increasing its renewable energy mix. What would you like to see as a part of that? What would a good sustainable mix look like for Malaysia's future?
I actually think there needs to be a two-pronged approach. We can't just focus on creating new sources of energy, even if they are renewable. I think we also have to look at making our use of energy much more efficient. So this raises the other approach of energy efficiency. And if we keep on designing inefficient urban spaces, inefficient buildings, inefficient vehicles, and so forth, our use of energy is going to be quite high, and it's going to be very difficult to contain the kind of demand. Once you build a building or build an urban neighborhood, you're basically locking in the kinds of efficiencies or inefficiencies for a 30-year span, right? It's very hard to retrofit it. So we need to start planning ahead. We also need to get creative about retrofitting the existing urban build that we do have. So we need to look at seriously energy efficiency measures to cut down our energy demand. Then we need to look at how we can start to replace some of our fossil fuel electricity with forms of renewable energy. So I think it's a kind of a two-pronged approach. The two kinds of renewable energy we could profitably look at would be solar. There may be a lot of potential in terms of biomass. I think that's probably the biggest section of renewable energy in Malaysia at the moment. Wind traditionally hasn't been that great. However, that's been with the old big windmill turbines. There is a new generation of low-velocity wind turbines, and I understand there's currently a study going on to look at the viability of wind power in Malaysia, because the amount of wind that goes through here is actually not big enough for power generation under the old technology. But with the new technology, we might have a new lease of life.
I think there's really a need to rethink development in the macro sense. Increasingly, we have to be sensitive that climate change is in our midst, and we have to work around it. We can't confront it anymore, though, because it's coming with a vengeance. So it has to be about the way we transport people from one place to the other, about the use of cars. We really need to impress upon people and government, more importantly, the need for public transportation, though, to begin with, public transportation. So it starts at that level, though. Today, almost in our houses, everybody in the house has a car, though. Now, this is very bad, though. In the middle-class family in Malaysia, a standard requirement would be everybody who's got a job must have a car. This is really not the way to do it, though. In Norway, in Sweden, and so on, it's only for the weekend use. And that's only one person for one family, though. Here, we have four cars for one family. And that has to stop. The public transportation must be encouraged. And number two, the way we construct our buildings, the way we construct our cities, for example, needs to be rethought, completely rethought, with keeping in mind the need for energy efficiency.
Should all things come to fruition, if we manage to come up with an efficient way of using energy, if we manage to retrofit our current urban setting, is there a case for renewables eventually replacing most other sources of power?
Well, I think you asked a million-dollar question, though. There isn't enough resources for all our needs, though. And we have come to accept that. But the nature of the market economy is such that, you know, the market economy loves to produce new things all the time, though. All the time, and people must consume all the time for the economy to expand and grow. So because of the nature of the system is such that this expansion is never going to stop. It's going to expand and expand and expand. And our needs are going to expand and expand. But the resources that we have cannot support that. So we really have to rethink about the notion of development. What exactly is this notion of development that we want to embrace?
I would say that the full potentials of revolutionizing design, and I say design in the large sense, right? Urban design, building design, home design, the way in which our products work. I think the full potential of that has not been fully explored or exploited. In fact, it's effectively considered cutting-edge research in other countries. I think this is something that Malaysia should look into because of our climatic differences and lifestyle differences that we have here. I think the government need only, you know, throw money to support this kind of research that could be quite a booming industry. And Malaysia is struggling to find industries to develop and expand in. So I think there's actually great potential for that in the future. It's very hard to say, given current science and current market dynamics, how much renewable energy can displace fossil fuels. But it's very clear that there are two trends. Fossil fuels are becoming less and less. Often the exploitation of them is also becoming more and more expensive, right, to move the marginal fields of oil for shale and so forth. But the cost of renewables is dramatically falling per unit, right? It's falling according to what they call Moore's Law, right? It's practically like an exponential curve. So I think these two trends are really in favor of a more renewable future. And I think policy needs to support that sort of market shift.
And finally, what would you both like to leave us with on the subject of Malaysia's nuclear plans looking ahead to October?
Well, I think the government should withdraw the bill or not even propose the bill to Parliament and maybe bring a bill to Parliament to enhance and promote the use of renewable energies.
I would certainly say the same. I think the renewable energy policy really needs a shot in the arm. I think the nuclear power bill should be retracted. I think the investment in all that should be rediverted towards exploring more sustainable forms of using and consuming energy.
Thank you both very much for coming in today. I've been speaking with Charles Santiago, Member of Parliament for Klang, and Yin Xiao Lung, Executive Director of Institute Rakyat. We've been discussing Malaysia's nuclear plans today. You've been listening to Earth Matters on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.